We'd like to welcome everyone to Karen's Teleseminar tonight. The topics for this evening are bits, cows and dogs, jigging, trailer loading, and rolling. So Karen, the first question is about bits. I have a 9-year-old Tennessee Walker mare named Luna that I'm working with on her ground manners, and she's improving, but I need to know what kind of bit to use on her. My daughter has been riding her in a full cheek snaffle because I believe in using the mildest bit possible, but it doesn't give her any breaks. Luna doesn't respect it and runs right through it. What type of bit do you suggest that would still be mild but get her attention enough so that she will have some breaks when needed? Thanks so much for your help. Lonnie in Virginia.
Okay. You know, it's a really great question and a really common question. And one of the ideas that people have about a bit is used in your question, the idea that the bit is breaks. In fact, in Spanish, the word bit is freno, and the Spanish word for brakes in a car is also freno. So it's that entrenched in our thinking that the bit is what stops the horse. Now, a bit can stop a horse. I mean, it absolutely can do it. There are all kinds of bits. There are, I don't know, I'd say hundreds, but it's probably more like thousands of different devices and tools that are used to control the physiology of a 1,200-pound prey animal. What I think everyone has discovered, if you've had horses for any length of time, that it doesn't matter how much gear you put on a horse. When a prey animal feels at risk or threatened in some way, their physiology will fight, you know, to the death. You know, and I say this in my seminars that, you know, a horse will kill itself trying to save its own life. And it could be over something as simple as a little piece of plastic that unexpectedly, you know, blew across their path. So, you know, something to understand about prey animals is their motivation. Their number one motivation is for survival. So when a prey animal wakes up in the morning, they're thinking, am I going to get eaten today? Okay. When a predator wakes up in the morning, you know, we wake up, dogs wake up, bears wake up, and we think, boy, I'm hungry. You know, we don't necessarily have that thought that we're going to be, you know, eaten that day. So it's a totally different psychology, and the motivation of a prey animal is very, very strong. And sometimes it perplexes us because we see this large, powerful animal that is capable of, you know, taking care of itself, and yet it can be fearful of, you know, the tiniest little unexpected things. So the thing to think about, rather than a physical device that will stop the horse, especially when, like you said in your question, when you need it, the answer really is how strong is your connection and your communication with the horse. The prey animal, because it has this motivation of survival in its world, in its mind, in any given moment, that motivation and that survival mechanism comes along with a structure in the herd to tune in to the individual that has demonstrated leadership in the herd. Because all the individuals can't always see what the threat is to the herd, that's why there's safety in numbers. That's why there's safety in the herd, because even though horses have really keen senses of sight, sound, you know, physiology, responsiveness to, you know, unexpected things, you know, their sheer muscle mass and speed, they have all the mechanisms for survival, but there's yet one more aspect that they need, and that is safety and herd. So they're designed from day one to tune in and to be very keen to the communication of the others in the herd, because they may not hear the danger come up, but another herd member might. So that is kind of the ultimate survival mechanism in the psychology of the herd dynamics. So the reason I'm explaining this whole thing is because, to be honest, I can't really tell you that there's a bit that's going to stop your horse. The only bit that's going to help you with your horse truly in any given situation is the bit of knowledge, you know. But human beings, we're very mechanical by nature. So we have a dilemma or a problem or a situation, and we naturally create something mechanical to solve it, from hinges on a door to, you know, vehicles and jet airplanes. You know, we go to a mechanical answer to the situation. Animals, there are some animals that use tools, but the majority of animals don't look at mechanical answers to their dilemmas. They look at their physiology and their psychology for survival. So when the human being tends to look at the mechanical direction, it doesn't always work. And yet what we do is we think, well, that bit doesn't work. We need a bigger bit. Okay. And if anybody's, you know, had horses longer than, you know, 3 days, I'm sure you've received the advice from well-meaning people that say, well, you need a bigger bit. And, you know, I've been through that. I've been through the, you know, people around me giving me well-meaning advice, being frustrated, going into the, you know, tax store and looking at the wall of bits and asking the tax store owner, you know, so I need something to stop my horse, you know. And I did. You know, I bought the biggest bit out there. I got to a point I had runaway horse, you know, that I was riding, and I could do walk and trot, but if it went over that at all, it just turned into just a flat-out runaway. So, you know, I've been through the whole gamut of every kind of bit and, you know, tie down and every kind of thing that everybody had ever suggested that I try. And when I started studying psychology of horses and understanding what motivates them and how to tap into that connection that horses naturally experience in herd dynamics, when I did that, then everything changed for me. Everything changed. I was sitting on my horse at one point with a little string around her neck, bareback and bridleless, and I had total influence of the horse. Now, I may not go ride off, you know, in that, under those, you know, conditions in a 4th of July parade or, you know, something like that, but I saw where I was going with this horse. This same horse that was a dead runaway no matter what I put on her was totally under my influence in willingness, suppleness, transitions up, transitions down, turns, backups, you know, every kind of thing that I could, you know, imagine. And, you know, with a little string around her neck. And in that moment, it just overwhelmed me to think of every kind of device that I had used on this horse trying to control her. And what I wasn't looking at, and I didn't realize at the time, was that I could be putting that same amount of energy and effort into discovering what I could do to create influence. How could I influence her rather than control? So if you can think of things that way, then that's a whole different tact. We're taking a whole different tact and a whole different approach. But it's a lasting approach. It's a lasting effect on how our interaction with horses, what's possible in our interaction with horses, if that's the road we want to choose. You know, some people say, oh, well, I don't have time for that. Just, you know, give me the, you know, quick fix. You know, we're always looking for a quick fix. And, you know, you can do that. I bought the biggest bit, you know, on the wall on that day, and I went home and I put it on that horse, and it did stop her. It stopped her in her tracks. It's called a gag bit. It doesn't even sound good, you know, if you think about it, but I put it on there. It was the recommendation. It was what I knew to do at the time. I've had people say, oh, well, you shouldn't admit to, you know, doing those kinds of things, but, you know, why wouldn't I? It wasn't that I was trying to do the wrong thing by my horse. I was trying to do the right thing. And, you know, I tried it, and it did work temporarily, but it never changed her desire, and that was the big difference. I didn't understand that there was an approach I could take using the psychology of herd dynamics to have that horse get so in tune with me that when I wanted to go, she'd want to go, and when I wanted to slow, she was happy to slow. So I wish I could say that there's, you know, a quick fix to this. But all I can offer you is an approach with horses. I can offer you a program that gets the kind of connection that a horse can understand us. When they can understand us, then they can respect us, and then they can respond to us. You know, we're asking sometimes for a response without the understanding, And without understanding, we don't have the respect. So there's a way of being with horses that they're happy to do what we ask them to do. They're happy to do it. They just, most of the time, they really are just confused about what's being asked of them. And then we get frustrated, and then we take, you know, what's natural to the human, which is a mechanical approach, and we use some sort of device, and there's every kind of, you know, device on the planet, and people come up and they have bits and things and this and that, and, oh, Karen, you got to use this. I've had everything from, you know, people, bicycle chains. I mean, you don't have to look very far to see this natural, the nature of human to fix a problem using mechanical means. It seems like it works. You know, it may even work superficially, but when you see a horse that is, you know, quote, under control in that person's, you know, mind, but you see froth coming out of its mouth, or you see, you know, it profusely sweating, or you see it tight, you know, the muscles ridden tight, or the eyes wide. You know, some people will say, oh, that horse is excited. He's so excited, and he loves the audience, and, you know, he wants to be here, and this is his way of expressing how fun he thinks this is. If you look at the horse, you can look and go, you know, I just don't see that horse as having fun. You know, maybe he's just, you know, this side of controlled terror. So without understanding, you know, luckily, you know, we're very fortunate that these animals are so adaptable, and they're so willing to comply. They're so big-hearted that they really make such an effort to figure us out. But if you can take an approach that taps into that understanding from a leadership point of view, you know, loving leadership. It doesn't mean it's militant leadership. It's not any of those things. It's to help that horse understand what it is that you're asking them to do using dynamics they're already familiar with the herd. That's my approach. That's what I teach, is herd dynamics and how that's applied by the person. So when you tap into that, then you take a horse from a place of lack of understanding to having such a strong connection with you that no matter what situation you're in, if you were somewhere and something happened, the bridle broke and the bridle fell off, you know, what would it be like if you could just reach down and rub their neck and they'd come to a stop? You know, that to me, that's the ultimate goal. And when people hear that, you know, they look at me and you could see just, it doesn't seem possible, you know, or people will say, well, you don't know this horse, or, you don't know this situation. But, you know, I handle thousands of horses, and I've not seen a horse that doesn't tune in to the type of communication that I teach people. I haven't met a horse. It's not to say that some horses don't take longer than others. Some certainly do, you know, but, you know, those are kind of special needs horses. But the majority of horses, once they understand what it is that you're asking of them, whether it's to transition up, transition down, turn, hold a certain frame, any of those things, you know, it's the person's ability to solicit, you know, to offer a clarity of communication so the horse can understand and create the desire, tap into the desire of the horse to respond, just like they would in a herd. You know, horses don't get out in a herd and one horse is a runaway. You know, they tune into the other horses. And the herd doesn't run away just because one's running away. You know, it depends on the individual. If it's the lead horse and that lead horse says, hey, we gotta get out of here, the other horses don't look around and go, oh, I wonder what scared her. You know, they tune into that one. But if there's, you know, some horse that, you know, it's doing something, they'll kind of decide how to respond depending on the herd hierarchy, on that individual's role within the herd. So I'm kind of giving you a big answer for what, you know, I'm sure you hoped for was just a quick question. You know, there's a special Karen Scholl training bit. You know, it doesn't exist. But what I do have to offer is a bit of knowledge. And what I suggest to people is to start with the ground skills and move to the riding skills, and start developing their ability to be clear in those transitions with horse, to to do those kinds of transitions in a non challenging environment. You know, don't go out with, you know, 50 riders and think, oh, I'm going to use Karen Scholl's, you know, techniques out here for the first time. You know, you're not set up in the learning environment to develop that the kind of communication you'll need to one day have that. You know, one student from a few years ago that comes to mind is a woman, and she has done extensive cross-country, you know, long-distance rides, you know, 50-mile rides, 100-mile, you know, pretty very serious competitor. And she took a bit of a break with that. She said, you know what, my horse does well, but I think she can do better, and I think I can do this more safely. And she took a little bit of a break from her competitive goals and readdressed the foundation side. She just, you know, had a sense that there were some holes there, that there was a different approach that she could take. And she reported back to me later, I think she took, I don't know, a handful of clinics with me and got the videos and really developed the kind of communication that her horse, she and her horse needed. And she said, you know what, Karen, and this was so rewarding for me. She came back and she said, I go to any competitive trail ride, and she said, I look around and I go, oh my gosh, that was me. You know, where it was just everybody is, you know, kind of agitated, the horses are excited, they're picking up on the energy of the other horses, and she said she can just go out there with her horse and just very relaxed, very calm, regardless of what's going on around them. She said her horse is performing beyond what it had done, and it had already competed successfully. And it was finding even more energy because it wasn't wasting it with emotion, with, you know, unnecessary emotion, because that horse was so tuned into her. She said, you know, when she needed to walk or rate the horse, bring it back, that wasn't a problem. She wasn't fighting anything. The horse was relaxed. It could cool off, and then she could pick it up and pick up her pace and hold it. And that horse, because it was in a relaxed, confident frame of mind with her, they would finish strong, and they'd come into the vet checks, and, you know, all the vitals would drop back down because the horse would just relax. He'd eat, he'd drink, he'd urinate, and, you know, off they'd go again. She said, I didn't realize, you know, she had a feeling that something was missing, but in her mind at the time, I remember at her first clinic, she said, I'm not even sure what I'm searching for, but I know there's something else there for me, and she found it, and I really give her a lot of credit to come back and kind of bring the foundation, go back and fill in the holes in the foundation that she had a sense were there. So if this gives you an idea of what's possible for your horse, you know, and especially, you know, if multiple people are riding the horse, it's about developing, you know, our ability to be clear for that horse so that the horse doesn't feel the need, you know, to run through a bit or take off. You know, I've had people look at my setup and they just say, well, you know, that just doesn't even look safe. Well, it wouldn't be safe if I just took my setup and put it on a horse that, you know, isn't confident yet in my communication and in, you know, my approach. You know, a horse that's been patterned or conditioned to be tight or on the muscle or push through pressure, all of these kinds of things. You know, there's a process that you take it through. It's a relationship, you know, between you and that horse. And you can't just go in and say, well, I bought you, I own you, I feed you, I, you know, pay the bills, and so therefore, you know, you do my bidding. It doesn't work that way. You know, I wish it did, but it really doesn't. We have to earn that with a horse. But it's possible. It's absolutely possible. And that's the answer I want to give you for this, because if you're looking for a bit, you know, a different bit, the best answer I can give you is a bit of knowledge. And if you can take that and see that there's something else possible for you, and then pursue that knowledge and just start at that foundation and make sure, you know, all the holes, you know, there's no holes in that foundation, then you can build something, you know, even more amazing than what you're already enjoying with your horse. So that's probably my best advice to you, is to just start with the foundation DVDs, get to a clinic, and get the approach that gives you that kind of influence over the horse's mind rather than, you know, chasing every kind of device and tool thinking that it's going to give you more control. Control with a 1,200-pound prey animal is an illusion. I mean, and that's just the truth of it. Under certain situations and certain conditions, you know, it just doesn't work. You know, it just gets to a point where it just is not going to work. And that's the truth of it. So, you know, that's why I feel like people call in with these questions to the teleseminars. I could sugarcoat it and go do this, and here's a technique or two, and go do that. But that just wouldn't be the truth of it. You know, the truth of it is, you know, I'm offering you a pathway to follow with your horse so that you'll look back on this question and go, wow, I remember when I, you know, was at that stage with my horse and look at me now. That's the best thing I can offer to you. And then the pathway to, you know, to do that. And if it doesn't work for you, you know, if you get my DVDs or you come to my clinic and you go, you know what, this isn't what I thought it was, it's not for me, you know, that's fine. I'm happy to refund money, any of those kind of things. But you know what, I can count on one hand situations, you know, where that's happened, because people come, and if they come with an open mind and enough and try, you know, you gotta want this and put the effort in, you know, what your horse will get back to you is tenfold what you put into it, I promise.
Wow, that is a really great explanation, Karen. This question comes up, you know, all the time, and we just thank so much for, you know, taking the extra time and explaining fully, you know, your ideas on bits and what people can do to really keep them safe with their horses.
Thanks.
All right, the next question is about cows and dogs on the trail. Karen, I was recently riding my 9-year-old Andalusian quarter horse mare on a trail ride through some cows here in eastern Colorado. A dog on the ride took out after a cow, and the cow charged the dog. The dog and the cow both bumped into my mare, and she freaked out and began bucking like crazy. She bucked me off, of course. What can I do to get her a lot less reactive in a situation like that? She's not around cows regularly, but has been pretty tolerant in the past. This just caused her too much fright, and she thought she was going to be eaten. Any suggestions? Diane in Colorado.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things going on right there, you know, and it's important to understand that everything that I'm teaching is in preparation for situations, for those kinds of situations. You know, you may get into a situation where you have to make the call and go, you know what, this just isn't setting up right.
And I need to get out of there. Or you look at it and you go, you know what, a lot of things need to happen here differently. I need to, get a better handle on my dog. You know, a dog should not go to anything, to rabbits, cows, other dogs, anything, unless you direct it. I mean, that's ultimate with a dog, okay? If you don't have that, then you need to be very cautious where you ride. And sometimes you come across, I mean, it's just inevitable. You're going to come across cows or bears or another dog or coyotes, you know, all kinds of things. So, you know, you can't always predict those kinds of situations. The other thing is just like I said in the last answer, the last response to the first question, is to get more influence over the horse. And when we get into those situations, you know, we don't realize that that we don't have all of the skills that we need until we get into a situation that makes it apparent to us. Okay, so, you know, one of my teachers, quite a few years ago, it was probably 10 years ago now, asked me to go bring in a herd of horses. Now, I had done a lot with cattle, and moved a lot of cattle. I mean, twice a day, every day for months. I mean, that kind of, you know, time with cattle. So I didn't even think about it. It didn't cross my mind that, you know, okay, we're going to move a herd of horses. It wasn't a big herd. It was probably, I don't know, 10, 13 horses, something like that. Didn't seem, you know, it wasn't bigger than the herds of cattle I'd moved. So I didn't, that didn't, you know, trigger me. But I got out there, and moving horses is totally different than moving cattle. And the horses move completely differently, and then my horse, being a horse, sharing the same, you know, gene pool, picked up on their energy, and next thing I knew, my horse was moving, you know, with the herd. And I got into a runaway situation. So, you know, same, you know, similar, different circumstances, same scenario, where all of a sudden, you know, you don't realize you're in a situation, you know, beyond your current skill set until, you know, you're in it. And then you don't really know how it's going to turn out. So obviously, you know, I lived that situation. And I went back to my teacher at the time and I said, hey, you know, I need to tell you what happened. I was in the same situation. Here's the scenario. This is what happened. You know, what do I do? And my teacher responded to me, and he said, don't put yourself in that situation. And I went, okay, I'm not sure what that means. And if anybody, you know, if you've heard me teach through a clinic or, you know, on my DVDs, you'll hear me express my frustration with what I call cowboy riddles. You know, my teacher at the time, that's kind of how he taught, and you might have heard cowboy riddles. I know a lot of people kind of nod their head and say, yeah, I've heard that before. I didn't even know what that meant at the time. And so, you know, here I was going, okay, I'm not really sure what that means. What should I change? What should I do? You know, I thought I was doing all the right things, you know, set up, you know, for that situation. And sure enough, a few weeks later, I was in the same situation. And I went, well, I've got to go bring in these horses. Not really sure what to do. You know, what are the chances of it happening again? And I put myself in the same situation, similar scenario, you know, everything. And I just thought, oh, well, I'm just going to take everything, you know, just real slow. I'm not going to go out of a walk, you know, just mosey along there. Oh, no, here we went again. I was in another runaway with a herd of horses situation. So, you know, then I really went back by the question to my teacher and said, okay, you know, it happened again. You know, what do I do? And, you know, I got the same darn answer. You know, well, don't put yourself in that situation. I kind of went, you know, I don't know what that means. So, you know, after years and years of, you know, these are the kind of things I think about as I'm drifting off to sleep, you know, my conclusion has been, and after, you know, many, many more hours with horses and situations, you know, now I feel confident I can go into those situations because I would set it up differently. And I guess the you know, bottom line to this is kind of back to the answer from the first question tonight. I didn't realize where my holes were in my communication until I put myself and my horse in a situation where it was obviously lacking. My skills, my influence over my horse was just gone. I didn't realize where that ceiling was with myself, my skill set, and my horse until I was in a situation that demanded more and I didn't have it to draw from. So there's a wonderful saying that you get good judgment by surviving your bad judgment. Okay. So, you know, in that scenario, just and I'm sure every time something like that happens, we have a tendency to replay the situation in our mind. And to me, what our mind is doing is we're trying to, you know, imagine the scenario, how it's set up, what happened, you replay it, you know, you remember the moment that you see the cow, you remember seeing the dog, the moment the dog left, the cow coming towards you, the realization that there's going to be contact, you know, all of a sudden the horse goes into, you know, bucking, you know, the moment you realize that there's nothing underneath you anymore, the, you know, on the ground. I mean, we replay every little moment in slow motion in our head many, many times. And the purpose of that is to recalibrate the situation. What our mind is doing is trying to figure out where we went wrong so that we can recalibrate our response for a future situation. Because it's not if it happens again, it's really when. And it can be something like, you know, a dust devil blows the garbage can over. You know, it doesn't have to be a cow and a dog and a, you know, it doesn't have to be the exact same scenario. So the thing that I would suggest is, again, go back to that foundation and find where those holes are. When I interact with a horse, you know, people come to my clinics and, you know, our tendency is to do what we're familiar with. And so everything looks good and everything looks kumbaya. And then I start asking people to do things differently or faster or slower or more precision, or, you know, we start mixing it up and all of a sudden things start to unravel because, you know, horses are just like humans. We're good at doing what we're familiar with. What we're not good at doing is stepping into the unfamiliar, either within ourselves or with our horses, because we don't want the horse, you know, we always want to stay this side of trouble. So we get into a routine. And what happens with that is it feels very comfortable to us. You know, we can call it staying in our comfort zone. You know, there's all kinds of things to it. But if you think about it, if we do what's familiar to us all the time, then when something happens, not if, but when something unfamiliar happens, we get uncomfortable and we don't have the thought process when we're uncomfortable. Our mind gets tight. Our body gets tight. Our hands get tight. We end up, you know, inadvertently grabbing on and kind of doing all the wrong things rather than being conditioned to think through those situations. So think of it this way. Anybody who does anything for, say, example, firefighting or flying jet planes or flying airplanes or ice skating, or we're going to see Olympics, 2012 Olympics, you know, what are these individuals doing? You know, so, and some things are more life-threatening than others. We were watching the qualifying for platform driving, and I'll tell you what, that I sit there and think, oh, gosh, horses, you know, have a lot of risk. I'm thinking their hair is brushing the edge of the platform when they're doing these, you know, spins and twists and full gainers and all this kind of, you know, these maneuvers off these platforms. Anything that requires our physiology to actually stay in motion and process in motion requires practice and simulation in advance, okay? And it starts with very basic maneuvers, and then it continually progresses and builds and builds and builds until a situation like that happens, and you either know, you see a cow at a long distance and say, you know what, to be honest, I don't know what kind of handle I have on my dog, we're going to go a different direction, you know? To be honest, you know, I don't know that cow or those coyotes or, you know, fill in the blank, and you make a different decision. You know, maybe, you know, it's just there's a million different things that could have happened. Or you go back to, you know, the round pen or the arena or the stall, you know, and teach that horse to have that kind of connection with you in every moment, in every day, in every situation. You know, people go along and, you know, we get to clinics and, you know, in clinic environments, we're very fortunate because we get to talk about every kind of scenario you can imagine. And a lot of times people, you know, bring up these kind of situations and scenarios, and yet if I just watch them from a distance, you know, they'll be leading their horse to the arena at the clinic and the horse is leading them, you know. And people say, well, my problem isn't leading. My problem is when the cow and the dog and all this. But that's what I'm trying to express to people, is that if we don't have the wherewithal to have the expectation of behavior in simple things, at feeding time, leading, you know, standing for the farrier or trimmer, you know, when the vet handles them, you know, all of those kinds of, you know, situations result in, you know, in the big stuff. So kind of going back to the clinic scenario, when I have a horse in my hands, I start asking that horse to do things. I start digging and seeing if I can kind of reveal where that horse's limitation is and then help them get comfortable beyond it. So one of the things I like to explain to people is that my approach with horses is about developing the person and the horse's ability to remain confident or comfortable in the confusion. We're all going to experience confusion in different scenarios, in different situations, people and horses alike. But if the cow comes at the horse and the dog is upside, you know, all those kinds of things, if you can think through it because you've done so much, you know, at home, if you've done just such an extensive investment of time and attention and techniques at home so that, you know, you just automatically know what to do in that situation, you know, ideally to prevent it. And then, you know, you can't prevent every, you know, condition from changing. It's, you know, how do you respond to that appropriately in that situation? And then come back to it and go, okay, you know what, that situation revealed a hole and I'm going to go back and ask for more from my horse. I'm going to ask for, you know, something snappier. I'm going to ask for more precision. You know, I'm going to expect more, not just, you know, stay in my comfort zone and keep doing what, you know, my horse and I are familiar with. And then, you know, hoping that these other scenarios and situations don't come along. So they're going to. I mean, that's just a fact of life. So if you can go back to that foundation and see if you can kind of dig in a little bit and see where, you know, things are lacking. You know, can you ask for your horse for snappier? Can you ask your horse for more? Can you ask for more precision? You know, so that the horse gets comfortable when it feels under pressure, mentally, physically, emotionally, and it keeps coming back to you. That's where you strengthen that interaction and that influence for a horse. So that when that horse gets tight and the horse says, man, there's a cow coming at me, you know, Karen, I'm not sure what to do. And I'll go, hey, I'll let you know what to do. And sometimes it's get out of there, you know. So, you know, going back to that, and also I'll mention, you know, anytime you have a behavior of, you know, bucking, kicking, rearing, these kinds of things, get the influence of the hindquarters. Be able to take that hindquarters away in any situation under, you know, whatever's happening. If the horse feels tight or things are getting wrong, that kind of a thing, be sure to take that, be able to take that hindquarters away. And you know, dissipate. Get when that horse starts to buck, it's because they get tight. So when you take the hindquarters away, you take the power away from that horse to even have the physiology to do that. So I will mention that when you go through the DVDs and you go back and you say, okay, I'm going to find where it's lacking. That piece right there just needs to be so good. You know, we had a clinic up in Colorado here a couple of weekends ago, and there were folks that, you know, have ridden with me before, and things were pretty good. You know, people were going along, and it was, you know, really nice, and then I started going, okay, now take that hindquarters away. Let me see, you know, what that looks like. How, you know, how quickly can you do it? How long can you do it? Those kinds of things. And people really realized that it was somewhat limited. You know, they hadn't done as much as they could have, not even knowing that, you know, if the horse gets under stress, that it's not going to be there for him. So hopefully that gives you an idea to go back. You know, usually when I'm explaining these things in the teleseminar, the person will say later, they've said, you know, you were talking right to me, you know, like, and a lot, because a lot of times I'm telling people things that they already kind of know, but they need somebody that's, you know, more experienced than them to say, you know what, you're on track. You know, your gut feeling is probably telling you to do these things already, but sometimes it's somebody coming back in saying, you know, hey, don't put yourself in that situation, and then let you mull over that for, you know, years and years to figure out what that means to you. So, you know, don't put yourself in that situation may mean go back and get the foundation even stronger so that when you're in those situations, it'll be automatic for you. Just like, you know, the flight simulators, you know, preparing pilots, flight simulators for, you know, every kind of thing. There's simulators for drivers, for, you know, all kinds of things. So don't dismiss the value in the preparation for those situations. And what you'll find is you'll go back into those situations so much more confident, so much more relaxed, because you'll know you're going in there with even more strategies and more tools and more confidence in your communication with you and your horse.
Well, thanks, Karen. We get this question quite often, been in many different forms, and what you explained is that just the better your foundation is, the more you start seeing these kinds of challenges just diminish or go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Then, and it isn't that it goes away, it's replaced. It's replaced with, you know, a very high level of communication. You know, that's what you're looking at doing. It isn't that, you know, these behaviors go away. Any horse can spook or jump or any of those kinds of things. My horse spooks, but he spooks really, he just looks at someone and says, "What do you think, Karen?" I go, "Oh, it's nothing." He goes, "Okay." Okay. But that's what's possible. But, you know, that's the investment of time and attention, you know, in everything I do with my horses. And not just, you know, when I'm riding them in those situations, it's everything. Everything, you know, means something to a horse, because it's the relationship that you're developing with them.
Well, thanks a lot for that.
Okay.
The next question is jigging on the trail. Karen, 6 months ago I bought a 17-year-old quarter horse. His prior career was as a rope horse for 8 years, then was used as an extreme cowboy race horse, and also for mounted shooting. He's wonderful in the arena by himself or in a crowd, and calm out on the trail when by himself or with just one other horse. But mix in more horses on the trail and he jigs. He's slightly better when he's in front and much better when we ride way out in front, like 100 yards in front. His jigging doesn't quiet down if we're on... Oh, it does quiet down if we're on an area of the trail that is closed in with brush closing in over the top of us. I've tried circling him as soon as he offers to jig and have a couple of friends that have been patient with helping us work on this. But I hate to ask my trail friends to wait as we circle and circle every time we go out. What are your suggestions to help him? Thank you. Best regards, Shelley and Jack in California.
Okay. Well, that's a really common question. And there's wonderful strategies for that. And I like to suggest that people think of different strategies. The first thing to think of is that circles are still forward motion. Okay, they're still forward. So when a horse is jigging, what that means is their desire is to go forward and faster than we're choosing. And so what we tend to do is to hold back on the reins. So when we hold back on the reins, what we're doing inadvertently is actually empowering the hindquarters. So the motion of jigging is actually the same motion as pee-off. So when a horse, if you go into dressage world and say, "Oh, I'm going to ask for a pee-off," you would actually do the same thing. You would encourage the horse to go forward, but you would hold it back slightly until the horse's feet are going more up and down than forward. So just to make you feel better, some people pay big bucks for that. They just call it something different. So if you understand the motion is forward, and with us holding it back, it's lifting the feet. There's a couple of different things that you can do. First of all, it goes back to that basic idea of cause the wrong thing to be difficult, the right thing to be easy. Okay. There's also a wonderful saying that you need to learn to trust that they'll respond, but be ready to correct, not more one than the other. So sometimes when we get into these situations, you know, because of how the horse has behaved in the past, what we have a tendency to do is go, "Oh, here it comes," and we start kind of getting in the position to pee off before the horse even thinks of doing it. And we don't realize sometimes that the horse is going, oh, here we go. And now, you know, here she goes, and I start feeling pressure and anxiety, and we start getting tight, and the horse starts getting tight. So sometimes it's about us not relaxing. We quit breathing. We go, oh, here we come. Now we're gonna get into this fight, because it feels like a fight, you know. The other piece is to remember that one rein is for control with the horse. When you take one rein away, you imbalance the physiology of the horse, and it weakens the physiology. So you can think of it as taking their power away. And we talked about that, you know, a little bit in the second question there. How do you take the power away? Now, sometimes you're in a situation on a trail, and it's not, you know, feasible to be able to, you know, bend the horse and do lateral flexion and take the hip away because they'd fall off a cliff. You know, I get that question all the time. So, again, it goes back to where's the foundation. So, you know, what I heard in the background of the horse is that the horse has a lot of performance experience. Performance experience is usually experience that doesn't involve weakening the physiology, but strengthening and empowering the physiology. So a lot of times when horses have kind of more of that than, you know, taking the power away, it's just an imbalance. And you can go back and teach the horse that you can take their power away, and then it kind of, I like to describe it as you're earning leadership points with the horse. So when you pick up on one rein, and the horse kind of disengages the hindquarters and softens a little bit, then you need to release that and have the horse be comfortable in that position. So when the horse is going along, I'll give an example. A good friend of mine has a young son who has a disability, and he's going along on a trail ride, and the gentleman's horse is jigging, and did it, you know, for years. I mean, that's just how the horse went on a trail ride. And his son's horse is just going along, moping along on a loose rein. And the person came up and said, you know, what do I do? And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, switch horses with my son. And the man on the jigging horse said, you know, oh, we can't do that. You know, your son would be hurt. You know, he has, you know, physiological limitations. You know, he's, you know, he can't do that. And finally he said, you know, trust me, switch horses. And within about, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, the kid's horse was the one jigging, and then his horse was relaxed going along on a loose rein. So, you know, we're participating, you know, in that behavior inadvertently. We don't realize we're doing that. And you know, what I heard in your question was, well, when the horse is, you know, when you say the trail is covered, that's an indication to me that visually the horse isn't seeing the other horses, or, you know, the horse is alone, so it's not the influence of the other horses. The question really comes down to, under any situation, can you, again, keep the influence over the horse's mind and emotions? Okay, and sometimes that's not it. Well, sometimes that's not an easy. It's easier said than done. But if you know that it's the emotions that you're going to tap into, then you start thinking of, okay, how do I take the power away from the horse? How do I get the horse comfortable with me taking the physiology back? And to a point where when the horse relaxes even slightly, you turn loose and trust. And you say, hey, when you walk like this, nothing but comfort here for you, buddy. And when you get tight, I'm going to pick up one rein. When you soften and relax, even the slightest, turn it loose again. And you may have to do that, you know, 1,522 times, you know. But think about it. The last time you went on a trail ride, the horse pulled on you 2,000 times. You know, it's not something where you're going to go, oh, yeah, you do it 3 times and it's fixed. That's just not realistic. But you're just going to slowly chip away at this pattern of behavior until one day the horse just kind of, it doesn't come up. Or if it does come up, you respond automatically and the horse just says, oh, I get it. That's not where my comfort is. My comfort is when I just drop my head and relax. Now, there's another approach to take, and that I don't have the time, and I want to make sure it's really clear for you. If you go online, there's a DVD under the television series, and it's trail riding etiquette. And there's a wonderful example of how to teach a horse to not get too chargy or jiggy on the trail, having other people help you. And it is not circling. Circling just reinforces it inadvertently. The horse says, I want to go, and we go, okay, well, you're going to circle, circle, circle. And there's not enough discomfort in that. It's actually almost satisfying or kind of revving up that desire for forward, because you're still going forward. You may be going in a tight circle, but it's not enough to cause that horse to not want to do that. So there's another approach using somebody who has a really confident horse and a confident rider, and that person in front of you can help your horse learn to rate itself. In fact, the person that helped me in that particular episode on that the DVD Trail Riding Etiquette, you know, she's ridden for years and years and years. The horse that she has in that DVD is her barrel horse, who she competed on for years and years and years, and just was, you know, everything was about jigging, you know, on the trail. And it wasn't that he jigged, you know, it got to be kind of an acceptable, just kind of a soft little, you know, you almost wouldn't call it a jig. It's just like a kind of a soft little walk. But you could see that the desire was there. It wasn't how the horse, you know, would walk to the water trough. You know, that's what we're looking for. Can the horse just walk along like he's going to the water trough? You know, and sometimes people that have gated horses will say to me, well, Karen, you know, the horse has to gait. You know, if the horse is in motion, he has to gait. You know, that's what gated, you don't understand gated horses. And I have to kind of, you know, go, oh, yeah, you know, that may be, but do you see the gated horses walk over to the water trough like that? Do they go pucka, 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 you know, over to the water trough? And they go, well, of course not. And I go, okay. So the horse is capable of walking in a relaxed, you know, kind of, I call it walking like an old cow pony. You know, any horse can and does walk like that. Okay, so why can't that horse walk like that under any condition when we ask for that? That's what we're looking for. So that's my other suggestion, is to get that DVD and have you watch it and have your friend watch it before you go out there and try to describe it to them. And use that technique. The person in the DVD, when I showed that, you know, when we got off camera, she just went, Karen, you know, that was terrific. She said nobody had shown me that or explained that to me. And here was her horse that she had used, you know, for how many years, and she could ride him, you know, everything was okay. But it was just always there. And boy, it didn't take but just a little bit there of that technique of using the second horse in front of you, and what that person in that horse does for you, that the horse just learns to rate itself. He just sat back, he relaxed, he walked with his head down, and we just had a nice little ride there. But you'll see the technique on that DVD. It's much more effective than me, you know, trying to explain it here in the amount of time that we have. But those two things, either, you know, taking that hip away, having your horse move, you know, sideways, let them relax when they're walking straight and relax, you know, if they get tight, you know, pick it up, move the hip over again using one rein and pushing their hip over with their leg. You know, when they soften and relax, you know, they decide that's too much like work, let them relax and just, you know, fall in behind the other horses. But you're just going to keep fiddling with it and, you know, kind of making a game of it in the mind. And the game that I like to hold in my mind with horses is that I'm going to take your comfort away and you're going to find it. So you're going to offer behaviors to me. When it's a behavior I want to see more of, I'm going to release the pressure and give you comfort there. So when it becomes a little game in my mind, then the horse, that takes the whole kind of attitude of, I'm going to control you, or I'm going to make you do something. All I'm going to do is just go, well, if you're going to give me this behavior, then I'm going to respond this way, and I'm going to wait, set it up and wait. And when the horse offers you a different behavior, then you're going to release the pressure and say, yes, I want something other than what you were giving me a moment ago. So there's a lot to this, you know, but what I want to tell you is that it's absolutely possible. I've not met a horse, even the most extreme jigging, regardless of the background or the number of years doing it, you know, by taking these kind of approaches with it, any horse can learn to just, you know, relax, you know, put their head down and walk along like an old cow pony. Even some of the most extreme horses that I've seen that are just, you know, the owner didn't even know not to let them run home. You know, I've had horses that have been, the owner let them run home for years and years. And I've been able to use these techniques in a relatively short amount of time have that horse and that owner just learn to walk along like an old cow pony, no matter how many horses are there, no matter what the terrain, you know, what the, you know, if there's brush covering their field of vision, you know, any of those things, no matter what position they are, you know, in the herd. So, you know, try those things and see if that doesn't work for you. I'd love to hear back from you on how that goes for you.
Well, that's great to hear that you've got some good suggestions, and there are answers for people that are having this difficulty with jigging on the trail, and they can get some relief and a more relaxed ride with just a little bit of more knowledge and practice.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, we get these horses for recreation, and then we get out there, and it's just, you know, sometimes it can just be so frustrating, and we just, well, only because we don't know what else to do. So, yeah, that's why we do the teleseminars.
Great.
And the clinics, and the DVDs, and everything.
Lots of help out there for people.
Yeah.
Well, we're almost at the end of the hour, but we do have two more questions for tonight that I'd like to get to, if you're okay with that, Karen.
Yeah, let's do what we can do here in 6 minutes.
All right. Well, we can remind people, too, that all these teleseminars are recorded and they're on your website, and people can go on there and listen to the questions that they don't get to here tonight or if they can't attend some other teleseminar. So these answers are available to you online.
Yeah, they are online, and also consider downloading them. I haven't done it myself, but people download, you know, and take it with them while they're, you know, cleaning the barns, and you know, put your iTrot headphones on, and you know, go listen to these. You know, we're everybody is so limited in time, but just, you know, that's the wonderful thing about technology, is that we can utilize some of our downtime, you know, and turn our downtime into learning time, and it makes it go so much faster. So, another idea for folks.
All right, the next question is a follow-up to your trailer loading DVD that this lady has. Hi, Karen. I saw your demonstration at the Arizona Festival of Horses, and I loved it. My horse Cheyenne is having difficulties getting into the trailer. I've owned him for 3 years. We do lots of groundwork, including going over obstacles. I have trailered him numerous times in friends' big slant trailers. He'll get in with me directing him from the ground. Not long ago, I was able to finally get my own trailer, which is a smaller one like you use on your DVD. But Cheyenne would not get into that trailer. So with the trailer in the yard, I began doing more obstacle work with him so I could get better at communicating with him when he is more excited. Now he gets halfway in and is so relaxed. Thanks to your DVD, I've gotten this far. Now, how do I get him all the way in? I love your method, so I'm eager to hear your advice. I hope he gets in the trailer one day. I would love to come to one of your clinics. Thank you so much, Amy in Arizona.
Okay. Well, good news. We're scheduling a clinic this fall in Arizona. So we've got, you know, several clinics booked through the end of the year. And but, Amy, you can't come unless the horse is all the way in. They hate walking, you know, their back feet the whole way. So let me help you with that. The pattern is when you're asking the horse to go into the trailer, the number one thing that people tend to not do is put a real feel on the lead rope. Okay? So a real feel means that when you have your hand on the lead rope, and I'm sure you've watched the DVD multiple times, you run your hand down the rope, close each finger, and there's pressure on that, okay? So soggy rope syndrome is probably the number one thing that I try to address with people, because, you know, somehow we get it in our minds, and I went through this stage myself, that pressure is bad, that pressure is evil, you know, but pressure is necessary for the horse to know what it is that's being asked of him. So it's just like, you know, somebody, the worst handshake in the world is a dead fish handshake, you know, but in some cultures, that's appropriate.
you know, in the Latino culture, a light handshake, or Navajo culture, a light handshake is appropriate. So, you know, but you go into other cultures and that kind of a handshake is not appropriate. And so what I'm trying to get across is that when you put a feel, a real feel on that lead rope, I want that horse to come forward with a responsiveness and an immediacy to that feel on that lead rope. That's primary. The reason I say that is when a horse gets stuck like that, you're going to need that feel to send that horse even further into that trailer bayou. So when the horse stalls out, whether, you know, they're, you know, anytime the horse is coming towards the trailer, you're going to allow that horse to feel a release, a reduction or a complete release of the pressure. So when the horse is going towards the trailer, the pressure should go down. When the horse is moving away from the trailer, if the horse is backing away from the trailer, that kind of a thing, the pressure should increase. That's why in the DVD that you've watched, I'm emphatic about people keeping their feet right next to that trailer. Do not move your feet. Because if you move your feet, then the pressure on the lead rope doesn't increase. It actually decreases or stays the same. So it reinforces the horse going backwards. You know, sometimes what people do is we think, oh, well, the horse wants to go away from the trailer, so I'm going to back him up a bunch to make that bad, you know, to go, oh, you want to back up? Well, here, I'll back you up, and then you won't like backing up, and that'll make you come forward. I have never found that. I've tried it. Somebody taught me that years and years ago, and I just never found that a horse could make that mental jump between I'm backing away from the trailer, and now you're backing me up, and now I want to come forward. I've never found that approach to make a horse want to come forward. So you know, you do some for it could be years, and you kind of go, that doesn't work. Okay, so what does work is when you keep your feet at the trailer and the horse stalls out, whether, you know, they've come to the trailer and they've gotten so close, they've just put their whisker, or maybe it's the first moment when they even look at the trailer, you know, they make even shift their weight toward the trailer, any of those things, you're reducing or releasing the pressure. But pretty soon, all you can get is a whisker in the trailer and they stall out. So they stall out at all those different stages. So the pattern is to put a feel on the rope, back up, okay, back them up, you're keeping your feet there, use your stick to come kind of under the chest, back them up, back them out, but keep the position on the lead rope. So as they back up, the pressure increases on the lead rope and then release forwards, okay? So the pattern becomes back out, back up into a pressure. I think of almost like a rubber band when they go back and they jump forwards. Okay, and so then they come forwards, the pressure releases. So every time they come forwards, the pressure releases. But when they stall out, you know, it's kind of the thing where the longer you let them sit in that spot, they go, well, I guess that's all you want. And then we're behind them, so then you kind of go, well, now what do I do? Okay, so back them out, back them up into a field forwards and release, okay, and they stall out. And just don't let them sit there so long. Back them out, back them up into field forwards. And do it again into field forwards. And you'll find that they'll kind of go, but I thought my front seat in the trailer was what you wanted because that's where my that's when you quit, okay? And now you're not quitting anymore. So then the game becomes, and it actually might get worse before you get better. The horse starts going, well, fine, you know, my front feet in the trailer don't give me release anymore. I'll go back to my old patterns of jumping around here like a marlin, dragging you down the lane. You know, you might see it kind of unravel on you a little bit because the horse says, hey, our deal was my front feet are in the trailer and we're good. You know, we call it good. So it may unravel on you. Don't worry about it. Just stay consistent. Go back to it to say, hey, this is great, but it's not good enough anymore. And that's how you communicate it. Back up into a field forwards. Okay? And pretty soon they start going, well, my comfort is not here anymore. I need to seek a new behavior to get my comfort. And then they'll start tipping to where the back feet will start to go in. Okay? So that's a huge one. That's a huge one. It's a real common place for people to get stuck at is, the, you know, I can't get the back feet in. Okay, so just make sure that you watch that video again and you really watch that last piece of it, okay? And I'll give you an extreme example that illustrates the value in this. A horse years ago, loaded in a trailer, and this works also for horses that go in the trailer and then they want to come out right away because they didn't shut the door or put the butt bar on fast enough. If the horse goes all 4 feet in and they come out, no big deal. Just regroup, get your tools. It's not a big rush. Have them go back in again. Sometimes people, you know, they get all 4 feet in the trailer and the first thing we want to do is shut the door. And if a horse needs to come out, I want them to come out because that means that they have not mentally loaded, you know, fully into that trailer. So please resist the urge to shut the door right away. That's a prey animal getting trapped in a, easy bake oven, in their mind. They're like, come into the oven, now we shut the door. So, resist that urge. When the horse goes in all the way, even if the horse, the back feet step in, resist the urge to think you got to close him in there until he likes it, okay? If he needs to come out, let him come out. Just let him come out. Let him come out. And actually, every time he comes out and goes back in all 4 feet, he'll get better and better and better. And even if they scramble a bit or get their legs tangled up, these kind of things, every time they go in and out of there, they'll get more careful, more deliberate, and more confident. So if you'll just kind of take that last piece, and just stay consistent with it. It shouldn't take very long because you're already doing this. If you've got this success so far, just take what it is that you've done already and just kind of finish the job. Apply it to the stage that you're at now. So that horse I started to tell you about, that horse was a professional non-trailer loader, and if it was in the trailer, it kicked the entire way to where it was going. And so I took this approach with this horse, and that horse, it would load in there, but once it got in there, it would scramble and kick out, and it would just stand there and kick. And I'd say, well, the horse is standing in the trailer, so I should just, give the horse comfort and release, but the horse would not quit kicking. I didn't even have the door shut. I was just standing there, and you see this hoof come back and be kicking straight out. That's why it's really important. Don't just, put the horse in the trailer and go put your precious self in back behind that horse, So I couldn't even see what it was at first, and I realized that this horse was just saying, well, all 4 feet are in here, but once I get in here, then I just start kicking. So I said, okay, not sure what to do. The horse is up there in there, but I just started using the same principle. I said, okay, when you're kicking, I'm going to bring you out, back you up, send you back into the trailer. And the horse got in there, started kicking again, brought the horse out, back up, back into the trailer. And pretty soon that horse said, you know what, my comfort is when I'm all 4 feet in the trailer and all 4 feet are touching the floor and stay on the floor. Okay? So if that gives you that idea of doing what you're learning on the DVD, just take it to that next stage, okay? And again, going back to causing the wrong thing to be difficult, the right thing to be easy, and allowing it to be the horse's choice to be in that trailer. Then you'll have a horse that, I'll look forward to meeting you at the clinic when we have the clinic here. We've got a couple of dates, either November or December this year, that we'll be having one here in Arizona. So I'm looking forward to that. Having a clinic in my home state, that's always a treat. All right? So I hope that helps you, and let me know how that goes for you.
All right, Karen. Hey, there, in the news lately, there's been a lot of forest fires here in the West, and you've had some experience with forest fires and trailer-loading horses. You want to spend a couple of sentences on how important it is that your horse is a good trailer loader?
I can't emphasize it enough. I mean, I really can't emphasize it enough because it's the one thing that you're going to need when the unexpected happens, whether that's forest fires or the horse, needs to get to a vet or your trailer breaks down or, heaven forbid, you have a trailering accident and need to load your horse into a strange trailer. When you have this kind of communication and this kind of skill set, your horse would load into the back of a pickup truck, you know, if that's all you had to, you know, get your horse to a safe place. So, you know, to create that kind of communication with the horse, you know, is really critical, not just for, you know, this time where we have wildfires and all these kind of bad things going on, but, you know, manure happens and, you know, it's about being prepared for those situations, not if, but when they arrive. So everything that you can do to take these approaches and practice them before you need them, you know, that's what we can do. That's the best thing that we can do for these horses. And our horses deserve, you know, for us to be at our very best for them.
Well, that's great advice. Thanks very much for that.
Okay. I wish we had more time, but I think it's important to keep these as close to an hour. How about if we pick up that question next month?
Okay, we'll do that. That'll be the first one we answer next month.
All right.
All right, well, we want to thank everyone for joining us tonight with Karen's Teleseminar. We'll have another one, as you just heard, again next month, same time, same place. And again, go online and listen to these past teleseminars and see if there's some questions that are already been answered that'll help you with some questions that you have now. So thanks very much. Karen, any last things to say?
No, I'm just hoping everybody has a wonderful summer and enjoy your time with your horses, and we'll look forward to next month.
Great. Thank you, Karen. Good night, everyone.
Good night.